the idea that we're coming over to play this one extended piece, that's, and we've been sort of describing the shows as new noise guitar explorations, which is what it is. It's basically James and myself playing electric 12 strings, and Deb is playing a baritone bass, and Steve will be playing a more extended kind of percussion setup. And it's a piece called, entitled Alice Moki Jane. Moki is M-O-K-I, and Jane is J-A-Y-N-E. And it's in reference to Alice Coltrane and Moki Cherry and Jane Cortez, these three women who are really significant to the development of avant-garde jazz in the 60s and 70s. Certainly people know about Alice Coltrane through her work with John Coltrane and her relationship to John Coltrane. And the piece itself sort of has motifs in it that are very referential to Alice's later work, that was more sort of Buddha Dharma centric. Moki Cherry is a woman who is no longer with us, and she was partners with Don Cherry. She did a lot of the artwork that sort of graced his album covers and such. And she was the woman who was instrumental in having Sonic Youth shoot the cover of Bad Moon Rising in her backyard in Williamsburg back in the 80s. Jane Cortez, I never met. She was a poet and very interesting, and they were all very friendly with each other. Jane Cortez is known for her poetry and her connection to Ornette Coleman, and so I wanted to write a piece sort of in reference to these three women because they were very inspiring to me, and the piece sort of has overtones of that inspiration.
When you're putting together this show, is the instrumentation, obviously, I know Alice Coltrane, for instance, she played the harp.
Yeah.
And when you're writing with a 12-string guitar, how do you translate different musical styles from different artists into a different instrument?
The guitars are tuned specifically to a specific tuning. I wasn't tuning the 12 strings to replicate any harp tuning. It's more of an emotional reference than it is, say, like a direct notational reference. But sound-wise and mood-wise, it evokes, the harp music of Alice Coltrane, if anything. But it's also, it goes through bits that are obvious for my love of noise and heavy guitar, rush and distortion and sounds of amplifiers exploding. It certainly has that as well. So it's not entirely prayer music. So in that respect, it's very sort of it's very much like my piece.
Yeah, I was wondering how that sort of the more free experimentation works its way back into the traditional rock album and how they could possibly influence each other moving forward.
I don't know. I for me, it's just like I find that I kind of been wanting to sort of move away from the sort of compacted song format, which, I have nothing but honor for, and I've done for the last 35 plus years, but I feel like I really want to sort of get into this kind of other form of songwriting expression, where it's just like it really is like extended composition. And I think it's possibly just because I've always sort of had a real interest in music that works that way, especially coming out of acousmatic music, like Luc Ferrari and Pierre Henry and these kind of French composers that were coming out of the 60s, very interesting music for me. But even like rock and roll music, be it the more extended compositions of Frank Zappa to a lot of like contemporary music, be it Sunno or Swans or, So I usually when I'm sort of like amongst that kind of music, I'm just thinking, like, I kind of want to do this. This is really what I do. And I do it anyway, but I just never really sort of present it. So it's just this last year where I've been presenting it, and I've been really sort of focused on it. And it's just now that I'm actually sort of taking it out, quote-unquote, on the road. In fact, tonight will be like one of the first sort of forays with this kind of group that will sort of do a succession of dates. And those dates will be in the East Coast.
I'm excited for it.
You know, they're going to be in Kingston and New Haven. And,
yeah.
You know, it was all predicated upon coming over to the States to do this this two-night residency at the Walker Art Center in Minneapolis.
Right, that's sort of retrospective show, correct?
Well, it's not so much a retrospective. It was basically a curatorial thing that I was asked to do, and it was I had the idea of doing two evenings of like poetry and music with poets and musicians that I'm interested in. You know, and I wanted to keep it sort of focused on the locality of Minneapolis as well. So there's Minneapolis poets, but there's also sort of poets from, like, Ann Waldman's coming in from New York. There's music that is coming in there, like Nels Klein and Daniel Carter, a jazz saxophone player from New York City. And Brian Gibson, who's the bass player of Lightning Bolt, will be there. And this is going to be different people playing in different formations each night, and some people performing solo. Like Chris Cole is this woman who's a sound artist from Canada, Crys Cole. She'll be there. She'll do like a solo piece, but then she'll also do a duo with me that's more improvisatory. And so it's just going to be that. It's going to be a collective that is going to be doing solos and collaborations. We're going to go to Chicago, and then we're going to do this East Coast run, which I'm really excited about because it's my home. You know, playing in New Haven is like all of my family is going to be there from Bethel, Connecticut. And I have family in Brooklyn who are all going to be at the Brooklyn show and at elsewhere. I'm a New England guy.
Yeah.
I'm an England guy, but I'm also a New England guy.
The band, as you mentioned, Steve Shelley is drumming, and Steve Shelley has drummed for you for a long time. Sonic Youth
we have
and everything.
ESP.
Yeah, I was going to ask, what about the relationship? I mean, helps you? I mean, do you read each other's minds? And I think you just answered the question.
He's like my backbone. You know, it's just like when you play with a drummer that you connect with, and you have this kind of relationship where you kind of work and grow together, where it becomes ESP, where you just kind of like you hear each other. In a way that's just like it's really cellular because you've been more or less kind of, you know, married. You know, we were together for a couple of decades there playing all the time, and so you can't replicate that with any other musician. That's something that comes with time and experience, and friendship. And so that's he's as good as it gets as far as like a technique drummer who has an understanding of the avant-garde tendencies that I will throw at him. So it's really good. I play with other drummers over in England, and it's a little difficult because it's a long distance relationship where Steve lives in New Jersey. So, but he's number one. I mean, he's the best. So if I can have Steve on stage with me, then I know that it's going, it's solid gold. So
I know that on this tour, you'll have a lot of fans coming out and a lot of Sonic Youth fans. And I wanted to ask if there's any potential in the future to release any archive material from the band.
Sonic Youth stuff?
There's
tons of different like weird live stuff, and a lot of that's sort of being put together lately, and I think some live things have come out that are more sort of focused on the Daydream Nation era, because Daydream Nation is 30 this year, and there's all this kind of hoopla about that, because there's a film that Lance Bangs put together that he's showing in select theaters, and some of us are doing, Q&As afterwards. And so there's some live concerts from that era of the late 80s that we've put together. And Steve and Lee have been really sort of instrumental in getting this together, and we're disseminating it through through a service online. So that stuff is just happening now. And but there's tons of stuff. I mean, there's also studio material that's just sort of like bouncing around as well. Now there's 30 years of recordings. I mean, it gets to be more prolific as the years go by through the 80s, because we didn't really have access to recording technology so much in the early 80s, at least not in the respect of recording every rehearsal or whatever it is. I mean, there's some loose cassettes around. But it becomes, you know, when we get sort of into bigger business in the late 80s and especially into the 90s, and then we start like really sort of capturing a lot of music, and there's a lot of that that has just never really sort of come out into to the public. So
yeah, you'll have more and more 30th anniversaries coming up for these
albums.
That's
true. Yeah.
And lastly, I mean, you've celebrated a milestone. You've turned 60, and you know, what does that mean to you? And for somebody who's still pushing forward and creating new work,
psychologically, it's a little strange because I don't really feel it. I've always sort of never really felt my age, and I know that 60 is the beginning of, well, 50 is the beginning of middle age. I mean, 60, but 60 is kind of the new 50, and 50 is the new 40. I mean, we all sort of live healthier and longer these years. But I don't know. I don't think about it. I really don't. And I just kind of, you know, the best thing about it is that living here in London, I'm able to get a free pass to get on to the London Underground and the bus system. I don't have to pay for it anymore, and that is really cool. That's the coolest thing.
I'm glad it's
freedom. Freedom is always the best gift.
Well, Thurston Moore, thank you so much for chatting with me. I really appreciate it, and looking forward to the tour.
It was a pleasure.